Yesterday, I gave a brief outline of the idea of functional integral, which is a generalization of path integral for quantum field theory. So I went a bit fast at the end, but you'll see more of it a bit later. And I assume that you have seen already some of it in the previous lecture. So today, I'll start to use path or functional integral to do actual calculation in a quantum field theory. And I plan to do it in a bit different way of what you have seen by canonical quantization, but try to show you that at the end you get exactly the same results, and a lot of the calculation can be done in parallel in a similar way using canonical quantization or using functional integral, especially in perturbation theory. But for some other calculation or physics question, sometimes canonical quantization is better, sometimes path integral is better. So the main tool I want to introduce today is something called generating functional. It's a technical term, but I'm going to show you what it is. So first, so the main idea is to introduce generating functionals using path or functional integral quantization scheme. Okay, so I will mainly use the quantum field theory you are used to at the moment, but which is the simplest one, which is a theory with a scalar field theory. So fermions, gauge field will come later during the course. So I start for a theory with a scalar field, phi, and I try to convince you in the first lecture that it's interesting, both for mathematical and physical reason, to consider the theory, the same theory, both in the usual physical Minkowski spacetime and in a somewhat more abstract Euclidean spacetime. So we have a scalar field phi. It has a mass m. Mass means the mass of the quanta of the excitation of the free theory. And it has an interaction potential, interaction term contained in potential V of phi. And of course, it is this scalar field is defined at each point of space and time. So we have two versions of the theory, which are related by analytic continuation and this Vick rotation trick, which is a theory in Euclidean spacetime. So in Euclidean spacetime, coordinates, let's call it E or but X Euclidean, are just X0 and some vector X. And the metric is just ds squared equal dx0 squared plus dx squared. That's Euclidean metric. Okay? And so a field phi depends on the position in space-time. So this is just Euclidean space with dimension d. So this is, let's assume that it has dimension 1 and dimension d minus 1. So Euclidean space-time is just r to the power d in mathematical notation. Nothing distinguishes the first coordinate that we are going to transform into the physical time and the other space-time coordinates. Okay. And in this theory, what we call the Euclidean action, which is a Vick-rotated version of the ordinary action in classical and quantum field theory. So the Euclidean action, I denote this Euclidean action by an E for Euclid, is the integral over this big vector x or xe of the usual term d mu phi squared, and I sum over the 1 to, or let's go, yeah, to d minus 1 to 0 coordinate derivative, and plus v of phi. And of course, this is phi, v of phi at point x, and this is the derivative with respect to the x mu coordinate of x, and not the sign plus, which is characteristic of the Euclidean version of a quantum field theory. So this is a weak rotated Lagrangian density of the field. Okay? And the same thing, Euclidean, in real time, Minkowski. Which is obtained by weak rotating x0. We have Minkowski spacetime, let's call it m1d minus 1. The vector, the spacetime vector, are just t and x. This is the time coordinate, this is x coordinate. The metric, Minkowski metric, is in my notation, minus dt squared plus dx squared. Okay, of course, I set that normalization, the speed of light is 1, as usual. And note also that I'm using a minus sign for time and a plus. So I'm using what is called the signature of spacetime, which is minus plus plus signature. And this is caused in literature, you often the East Coast metric for spacetime. In some textbooks, this signature is used. In some others, it's the opposite signature, plus, minus, minus, which is called, of course, the West Coast metric. But it's just a convention. So if you pay attention to the signs, you get, of course, the same physical results. Okay. Okay, so this is a metric. And in this notation, the physical action for a field configuration is the kinetic terms, so a term involving the derivative of space minus the term involving the spatial derivative and the potential energy. So S of E is integral over, of course, dt. Well, we can write this dx, but this is now integral over dt over my Minkowski spacetime. And I have, well, let's write it in 1 dt of phi squared minus 1 half of dx phi squared minus v of phi. Okay. And the connection between this theory and this theory is just obtained by doing what is called the weak rotation, namely, you know, making an analytic continuation. For instance, if you you start from the Euclidean theory and you consider that this is the real coordinates, all the not only the action, but the observable of the theory, even the quantum observable, expectation matrix element of operator, in fact, turns out to be analytic function of x0. So they can be extended, for instance, by analytic continuation from the real axis for the Euclidean time to the imaginary axis, which correspond to real physical time. And the relation, the weak rotation, that you transform t into minus I x zero, that's something I called tau yesterday, but let's call it x zero here, or equivalently, that you transform x zero into I t. just inverted this notation. So if you start from the Euclidean theory, you just replace x naught by it. And if you start from the Minkowski real-time physical theory, you replace t by minus I x0, assuming that analytic continuation is possible. But it turns out that the there are some mathematical results that it's usually possible. Okay, so this is a classical Euclidean action. This is a classical action. And of course, I'm going to use as a theory a potential V, which is going to be usually either, let me write it, V of phi, either to be 1/2 of m squared phi squared. This is the free theory, the free field, the one you have seen how to quantize by canonical quantization, or V of phi equal V0 of phi plus an interaction term, which is a local also, local interaction. So usually one takes that V0 of phi, V interaction phi, the simplest case is a potential which involves the fourth power of the field instead of the second power of the field. So that's a quartic interaction term, not a quadratic one. And this is a coupling constant, which measures the strength of the nonlinear coupling or the interaction which is between quanta of the theory. And everywhere will normalize by a factor of factorial 4 of 4, which is 24. That's the factorial of the power here. And it turns out that it's convenient for normalization. But of course, it's a choice. So G is a coupling constant. OK, and perturbation theory that you have started to study in quantum theory and quantum theory courses means, is it possible to expand physical quantity for the interacting theory as a power series in the coupling constant? And what is the nature of this power series? Okay. So now, you know that in a physical theory, we are interested into the green what's called the green function or the Schwinger function, the expectation value in the vacuum of time order products of operators. So that's something which can be defined in. So we are interested in the green functions or Schwinger function or correlation function, which correspond to what is called, you consider the vacuum state of the theory. The vacuum state is easily defined in a free theory. In an interacting theory, it's already something rather complicated. And you consider the matrix element, so the quantum expectation value and the vacuum state of time-ordered products of some operators, products of local operators. So the simplest operator has a product of n field operator. These are the local field operator. This is a matrix element. These are Ketz quantum state. This is a dual bra, and this is products of operators. Okay? And we know from the formalism of quantum of a path integral that this object that we can compute by canonical formalism for the free theory by expressing phi in terms of annihilation and creation operator for the more of the field and using commutation relation, etc., using Vick's theorem, turns out to be something like, well, given by a path integral or functional integral. That's what I explained without a complete derivation. So this object, let me call this a green function, G. So it has n point, and it's a function of the n space-time coordinates, right? This gn of x1, xn is given by a path integral of exponential of I over h bar times s, the action, classical action of the field. But now we integrate over configuration of the field. We perform a path integral or a functional integral over all field configuration. But here you insert phi of x1, phi of xn. So computing matrix element of operator amounts to insert the corresponding power of the field in this functional integral. So in some sense, this is an average of this observable, this variable with a phase. And you have to normalize this. It amounts to fix the definition that so that the norm of the vacuum state is 1. So you have to normalize this by exponential I over h bar s of phi without the okay, so that's path integral and that's the operatorial variation. But that's two ways to compute the same object. Okay, so now in the in the Euclidean theory, you can define the same object. So I'm going to define an expectation value here, but you don't have any vacuum state, of the analog products of operator phi of x1, phi of xn. But now it's in the Euclidean theory. So let me define this as gn, but for the Euclidean theory, so I put subscript capital E for Euclid, of x1, xn. So here those are points in Minkowski spacetime. Here those are coordinates in Euclidean spacetime. And by the same rule of calculation of path integral, we know that this is defined as an Euclidean path integral, where now to a field configuration is associated a real weight, not a complex phase, which is exponential of minus 1 over I, the Euclidean action for the corresponding field. But here, the same similarity here, I compute the integral with this weight factor for each field configuration of the products of phi of x1, phi of xn. And I normalize this by the similar denominator, but computed for the Euclidean theory, 1 over h bar SE of phi. Okay. So this object is defined in a functional integral by this. Okay, and if I trust the weak rotation trick, I compute this function in Euclidean theory. So it's a function of the d coordinates for each of the points. And it turns out, if I trust or if I can check that the analyticity of the Green's function, that I can make an IT equation from real x0 to imaginary x0, and I get this Green function in Minkowski spacetime, which is a causal correlation function, a causal matrix element. Okay, so you see that this is just the same thing, except that this is the Euclidean, the Minkowski version and the Euclidean version. Okay. One needs to keep in mind that this is very formal definition. I have not defined really what the measure is. Well, I told you what the measure is, but you have to define a bit what are the boundary conditions. Here I have not specified what are the boundary conditions. And so let me, what are the boundary conditions? And the simplest and but also physical way to choose a boundary condition and to take as Euclidean spacetime which is a torus t to the power d, which is namely a torus in each direction. So I take periodic boundary condition. So this is, if you want to be R over L times Z, if you are found on notation, to the power D. So your spacetime is a torus in all direction with a period L. L is the size of the torus. And you take, so you first define a path integral where you integrate over fields which are periodic with the same period L in all directions in Euclidean spacetime. So if you want, you prefer, you take an hypercube, a square, and it's periodic in each direction with size L. This is my. Okay, and you take, so you first compute for finite L, and then you take the limit L goes to infinity. So this is a path integral defined in infinite Euclidean space-time, but precisely it is defined as the infinite size limit of an Euclidean path integral defined on a finite space-time. Which makes so. In this way, you can control if there are divergences, singularities when L goes to infinity. This is often called by analogy with statistical mechanics the thermodynamical limit. You know, many results of thermodynamics applies when you take a finite system and then you take its limit, L goes to infinity, so that you can consider, you don't have to consider finite size effect. Okay. And there is a motivation for that. Remember that I explained briefly and possibly confusedly last time that projecting out of the, on the ground state quantities in a real-time quantum field theory amounts to consider the corresponding Euclidean quantum field theory to take periodic time and take the limit. And the period is the inverse of the temperature of a thermal quantum field theory. And taking the limit L goes to infinity amounts to take the temperature of the quantum system goes to zero. So L goes to infinity here amounts to take the temperature of the quantum field theory at finite temperature T goes to zero. And therefore, you project on the vacuum states omega. I never remember if vacuum takes 2C or 2U. So Dan has to correct me every year. So what is it?
2U's.
2U, yes, that's what I thought. Okay. Okay. So this is formalism, but I hope it's clear for you. So how do we compute these objects? You know the rules, how to compute them in perturbation theory using canonical formalization. So the main tool is the Wick theorem. So you expand things in the coupling constant. So the main results are, you know, Wick theorem. And perturbation theory. Okay, and out of this, Wick theorem and perturbation theory, you derive the famous diagrammatic rules of expanding in terms of Feynman diagrams and amplitudes associated to Feynman diagrams. So you get the famous Feynman diagrammatics. Okay. And in fact, one can use these rules of calculation. Now, if one starts to actually compute path integrals, functional integrals, rederive the same rules. We are dealing with the same theory, so the rules of calculation should be the same, but they can be derived in a slightly more different way. Okay. So remember, what are those Feynman diagrammatics rules? They are basically that if you compute a Green function, g of x1 up to xn, this can be expanded as a power of the coupling constant. For instance, we consider the coupling constant as a sum over Feynman diagrams or graphs. So let me denote this graph G. That's a capital, well, that's a capital G, but it's not this G, which is a Green function. So better write this. Yeah, that's a curly G, and that's a capital G. So these are diagrams. And to each Feynman diagram is associated a power of G, which is the number of vertices of the diagrams. There is a symmetry factor C of G, which comes from the combinatorics of making Vic, applying Vic theory and making Vic contraction between pairs of fields. And then you have the difficult part, well, the most difficult part, which is the amplitudes, some function of x1, xn of the position, which depends on the coupling and of the graph. So it's a Feynman integral. Or the amplitudes associated to the graph. And for the 5-4 theory, for instance, those diagrams are made out of propagators, lines, and to each lines are associated some, either that depends on the position of the points or that depends on the momentum flowing through the points. Propagators can have a momentum k or position. This one. X2, you have vertices. For the 5-4 theory, vertices carry four legs because they carry four fields. So you have vertices. And a propagator is a function of X. Those are Feynman propagators. You have vertices, and the Feynman diagrams are made out of combining those according to the rules. And for instance, if you have one of the famous diagram is this one of the simplest, where you have, if you are associated to a four-point function, x1, x2, x3, x4, if you take a Fourier transform of the amplitudes, you have momenta flowing through the lines. So you have momenta k1 up to kn by Fourier transform. And you have some momenta here flowing through the internal loops. And the integral is given by an integral over the internal momenta flowing through the loops. Okay, so I think you have seen those rules on some examples. And if not, ask me or tell me. Okay, so my aim is to show you how this can be obtained, repeated by functional integral, using this method of generating functional, which is a shortcut way to manipulate a lot of amplitude at the same time. So let me now define what I called generating functional. So, for this, this later on will be used for 5-4. So, I consider a quantum field theory, especially this one, either free field or the interacting 5-4 theory, but the formalism is general. And I'm going to define, now I have to use my note, otherwise. Okay, I start from this functional integral or this functional integrals, integral over the field, but I will change a bit the action by introducing a classical field, which is called the source term. So I introduce a classical, it's not a quantum field, classical source term, which is a field, a classical function, field that I'm going to denote g of x. So I introduce an additional variable, which to each point of space-time, I associate its value, it define a function g. I'm not specifying this function is continuous, is smooth, it can be, you know, it's a distribution, whatever. It's a bit formal. Okay. And I defined the generating functional, the generating function that I'm going to call z, curly g. It's a functional. It's a function of this function g. So it depends on the value of g of x at all point x. So it's a functional of a function in the same sense that the classical action of a field is a functional of the field phi. Okay. So this generating function z of g is defined in the following way. First, for the Euclidean theory, z of g is just the functional integral I have at the numerator or the denominator, integral over field configuration of exponential of minus 1 over h bar. But then I had to the action a linear term in phi. So I add phi multiplied by g. And this notation is just that g times phi is just the integral over space-time g of g of x times phi of x. And so since it's just the scalar products of g by phi. So g of phi is a number. It's a functional of g. It's a linear functional in g, and a linear functional in phi. Okay. Now again, I am French, so I'm confusing g and j, and I never remember because it's the opposite in French. So I presume this is j, and the g here is g. Yes. But sometimes I made the mistakes. Okay. So, you see, I just changed the action by adding a linear term. So, in some sense, you can couple, it's a coupling of a quantum field with a classical field. Very simple coupling, it's linear. Okay, so this is a definition for the Euclidean action. So, this is the Euclidean case. And for the Minkowski case, you can define the same trick just by making a making a weak rotation. So z in the for the Euclidean theory is for the Minkowski theory, z of g is just integral over d phi. Here this is what the Euclidean action, and here it's exponential I over h bar, the action in real time for the field configuration. But then the sign minus is transformed is a plus. It's just check. Okay. So this is a Minkowski. And this is the Euclidean version dispersion. Okay. And what's the use, what's the advantage of using this? Well, it's rather simple. It's just that first, if you set J to zero, you recover your usual path integral. But now you have this additional variable, so you can take derivative of G with respect to G. So you can take functional derivative. And basically, if you take a functional derivative of G, well, assuming that the derivative with respect to J and the integration of a phi commutes, this is a non-trivial mathematical point, but we are physicists, so we first assume that it works, and then we check. Of course, mathematicians, real mathematicians, don't like this at all. Taking the functional derivative with respect to the value of J at a given point in spacetime X for the over exponential of G phi 1 over h bar G phi, well, you get just ordinary. The derivative of the exponential is the derivative of this, of the variable in the exponential times the exponential itself. So this is just 1 over h bar 5x exponential of 1 over h bar j times phi. Okay, it's just functional, it's ordinary rules of functional derivative acting on exponential. Okay. And well, similarly here, you get the same thing except that you get the I factor in addition. So you get 1 over h bar, and for the Minkowskian theory, you get a I over h bar 5x. That's the only difference. And therefore, expanding in terms of j, the function z of g, you know, you can expand the exponential, and you get all these objects, all the correlation functions, all the Green functions. So this g of g contains all the Green functions. And if you can manipulate z of g globally for any value of g, you are making calculation over all the Green functions at once. You don't need to repeat the calculation for the 2-point Green function, the 4-point Green function, etc. I'm manipulating everything at the same time. Okay. So, for instance, you can check that this here. You can check that. Well, up to now, I'm going to discuss the Euclidean theory because I get rid of the a bit annoying for me I factors, but it's easy to recover. It's just an exercise. You can check that. Soon time to stamp. So you can expand in G, Z of G. That's one way. So formally, Z of G. No, I am in Euclidean. Well, I expand the exponential. So I just get that this is D of phi exponential of minus the action and times exponential. So I get exponential of phi. And so I get, I'll let you do the calculation, a sum over n from 0 to infinity, so the term of factor g to the power n in the exponential. I just expand the exponential. So I get h bar to the power minus n. I get the factorial of n, because that's the exponential, the series expansion of the exponential. And I get, for each term in the exponential, a big integral, integral over d, well, let's write it z1, over d zn of g of z1, g of zn, okay, times the functional integral of d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi times phi of z1, phi of zn. So let me define this as a function zn, z1, zn, where this z of n is just, by definition, equal to this one, you see, is by definition equal to the functional integral over d of phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s e of phi, phi of z1, phi of zn. Okay? So it's very similar to the Green function in Euclidean time, this one, this g, except that the denominator is not here. But of course, you can easily show that just the denominator is just given by the same thing. So basically, the Green function with n point of z1, zn is just z of z1 up to zn divided by z, if you want, 0. Well, z0 is just this integral the integral here. Okay. So this z0 is this quantity where you have no phi. So it's just the ordinary integral. Okay. Okay. Or equivalently, so you see that z of g contains all the Green functions of the series. Okay? Or equivalently, I can just express this and state that the nth functional derivative of z of g, so delta over delta g at point z1, delta over delta g of zn, so I take n functional derivatives that may and usually have to be at different points, of z of g, I take the functional derivative of this. So each time I take a functional derivative, I get a phi of z1, phi of zn, and at the end, I set g equals 0, but only after performing, and I get these unnormalized correlation function of z1, zn. This identity is, of course, totally equivalent to this identity. Okay? Good. Well, it's just time to make a short break. And after that, I'm going to introduce another correlation function, generating function, and then I start to do some, use them to make calculation. Okay? Yes? So we have the break.
That'd be a small g over there, because you define the
Pardon?
Small g. You define the small g for Euclidean action, right? So should that be a small g over there?
You see a big G? I'm sorry.
Is that a big? Sorry, I don't know.
No, this is a small G.
I'm talking about the expression on above, the Green's function.
This one?
Yes. So you
Yeah, by definition, this is same than this one.
Okay, I thought we made a distinction between like the Minkowski Green function and the Euclidean one, but
Well, I show that they are related. So
okay.
here I'm considering Gn in the Euclidean theory, but basically Gn in the Euclidean theory is oh yeah, is
Yeah.
the, you mean you want a E? Yes, of course. Yes, this is GE if I am in the Euclidean.
Okay, sure.
And oh, of course, I forgot the H bar. There is an H bar factor here. And if you are considering the Minkowski theory, the H bar is replaced by H bar divided by I, and this is Z. This is not Euclidean, but Minkowski. Okay, but that's the only difference. Okay. So let's be at minus 10. Yes.
So the you should be differentiating z, not curly z.
Pardon?
What your the functional derivative, right? It should be z.
This is a Z I've defined by this this one. This is ZE in this case. I'm considering Euclidean setting, but everything can be done in a very similar way in the so this is ZE if you want. This is ZE. This is ZE. Is this your question?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm guessing I'm asking whether it should be.
Everything is E, as some E.
This one, should it be this one? Or are we
No,
differentiating?
it's this one. No. This is this one. So this is a generating function, the functional of G. And when you take
But it's.
functional derivative of Z of J at for the value at different point and set G at the end, you get this functional integral, this one. This is by definition Z E endpoint of Z1 Z n. Okay. So this is an unnormalized correlation function or Green function. This is a generating function for those correlation function. You see,
differentiate as many times as you want, and then
you get the
the correlation
corresponding
function.
function with endpoint.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this guy contains all the information
So
you need.
this one globally contains all the information, all correlations. Of course, it's a function which depends on an infinite number of variables. But if you can manipulate this one,
What do you mean by infinite number of variables? It just depends
because
on the.
no, it depends on the value of J at every point at the same time. So it's a
Oh, I
function
see.
of a function.
Yeah.
Well, this one is a function of just a different point. So it's a function of n times d variable if we are in d-dimensional space-time. Right. So this is a function of a finite number of variables, while this is a function of a function. So it's a much bigger object.
Professor,
Yes.
the bracket there, like left-hand side, it's just a shortcut for like vacuum excitation value with time ordering, right?
I don't know why there is a bracket here first. The bracket on the
Yes.
first line, it means an expectation value with respect to this measure, exponential minus 1 over h bar SE of I.
Okay.
So if we switch to the language of probability, you know, in the language of probability, the expectation value of a random variable is the value of the random variable, you know?
Yes, yes.
Weighted by the probability for each
yes.
value possible taken. So this expectation, this bracket means an expectation value in the sense of probability theory.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. So left hand side, it's just a field, not an operator, right? In the left hand side.
Here it's expectation, well, here it's an expectation value of a random variable, which is a random field.
Okay.
In the functional integral in the Minkowski spacetime, it's still the expectation value of a random variable, but weighted not by a probability, but by a phase.
Okay.
And the rules of path integral means that computing this expectation value with a phase weight factor is equal to the vacuum expectation value of some time-ordered products of operator. So there is a dictionary between random variables in the path integral and operators in the canonical formalism, where you have Hilbert space of states and observables are associated to operators. So that's why we use the same language and the same notation. Yeah. That's why we have those bra and kets, which correspond in expectation value in the quantum theory in terms of matrix element between quantum states, here the vacuum, while in the path integral, those are expectation value in the sense of random variables and probability.
Yeah.
But they are both expectation value. So that's why we use the same language and the same notation. And that's one of the beautiful aspects of this. Okay? Well, I was expecting to drink something, but okay. So let's continue. I hope I will not dry up on the table. Okay, so where I am. Now I need to use the blackboards a bit more. Well, I still have a blackboard here. So. Okay. Oh, no, it is. Yes, no, that's okay. Okay, so forget about this. Well, I think I can do it here at the moment. And I'm to introduce another genetic function. Let me call it W, that's how. Which is that, just if I am not mistaken. H bar times the logarithm of this generating functional. I just said the log of a function of J, and I get another function of J. Okay, so in other words, this is equivalent to state that Z of J is exponential of 1 over H bar W of J. Okay, that's something trivial. So we have seen that this green function are given by the sum of a Feynman diagrams. Correspondingly, we can expand W of J in powers of J. We get another correlation function. We get that W of J, if we take the functional derivative with respect to J at the point Z1 times delta over delta G of Zn of W of J, then we set the source time to be equal to zero. It's either Euclidean or Minkowski. We get h bar. Well, there is an h bar here that I have added for some reason that it would be clear. So h bar minus a number of points, some function that, of course, I write curly w, endpoint for the point z1, zn. Okay? So, now, what is this object? Well, if you remember what you have seen in canonical quantization and believe if everything works, there are no stumbling block in this this defining this formalism, everything commutes, everything can be integrated over, we know that Zn of Z1, Zn is even by a sum over all Feynman diagrams with n external legs. So if you consider, for instance, the case n equal 4, you are getting a sum over Feynman diagrams where you have n external point, 1, 2, 3, 4, but you get all the Feynman diagrams. So you can have the connected Feynman diagrams or so you can have a combination of four-point diagrams, two-point diagram, or even vacuum diagrams. And of course, you may have this plus Feynman diagrams, etc. 2 points, 4 points. So you have in this big sum, when you consider which diagram contributes to Z, you have all the Feynman diagrams, whether they have external legs or not, whether they are connected or not. So you have a lot of information. It turns out that this W is given by the contribution of all connected Feynman diagrams. So you get only, for instance, for n equal 4, for n equal 0, you get all connected vacuum diagrams. For n equal 2, you get all 2-point connected vacuum diagrams. For n equal 4, you get all connected 4-point diagram, etc. Okay. So this object is more natural to consider it because it contains much less information. The other one is just containing the same information, but we recombine the individual terms in the expansion of W. And for instance, it is those ones which we are interested in computing, for instance, scattering amplitudes. You don't need the vacuum diagrams. If scattering amplitudes involve internal ones, they are disconnected. You can separate. So connected Feynman diagrams are the natural object to consider. Okay? So why is it so? Well, one has to work a bit more and to see exactly how the demanding function. But basically, this is contained in this relation, the fact that Z is the exponential of W. And so, if you assume the result, assume that W is given by the sum of all connected diagrams, Z can be written as exponential of, well, you have W, which is the sum of W with zero connected, plus W n equal 2, plus W n equal 4, etc. So W, if I sum the derivative, this is the contribution of W coming from zero vacuum diagrams with two external legs, vacuum with four external legs. So now expand the exponential. This is 1 plus W of 0 plus W of 2 plus W of 4 plus 1 half of W of 0 plus W of 2 plus W of 4 squared plus etc. So this is the contribution of 1 is basically the contribution, the amplitude associated to no diagram. So it's 1 basically. If you have nothing, you said the weight of this is 1. Here you have the sum of the contribution of all connected vacuum diagrams. Here you have the sum of the contribution of all connected two-point function 4. Here you expand and you take, you have W0 squared. So this is contribution of this, the contribution of this. When you expand, this is the contribution W0. W0 is the contribution of a diagram made out of two connected vacuum diagrams. W2 is a contribution of two disconnected two-point functions. But you have also the contribution of one disconnected two-point function and one vacuum diagram. W4 is a contribution of four, but also is a contribution of this times this plus this times this. So you start to construct by expanding the exponential diagrams made out of several disconnected parts, and this go on. And of course, to be sure, you have to check that the symmetry factor associated to diagram with several connected parts are basically, you know, the products of the symmetry factor of each connected part. But the rules of, you know, the Feynman diagrammatics rules ensures that, for instance, here you have factor 2. Here you have factor 2. If you have a factor 2, etc. Plus it. So everything works. That's the general idea. Writing all the detailed proof would take 1 hour or something like that on several blackboards, but that's the general idea. Okay. And it works, you know, combinatorics is a branch of mathematics where you count how many ways there are to count objects or to gather objects. So this trick is not a trick for Feynman diagrams. It's a trick for the general theory of combinatorics of object. You can count the tiles, dominoes, don't know, whatever, sets of hens and birds, whatever. So combinatorics is everywhere. Okay. So that's a general idea. Okay, so this is the last part of formalism that I wanted to show you. And now let's go to actual calculation. So actual calculation, I think I can erase this. For the moment, I've not done any calculation except this expanding exponentials. Okay. How many? Okay, 25 minutes. So I have two choices. Either I derive something called the the Schwinger-Dyson equation, but that's a bit formal. So let's start by doing an actual calculation. Let's consider now the free field. So the action for the Euclidean free field, I'm considering the Euclidean because I don't want to get lost in I factor, but that's the action is integral over this over my Euclidean spacetime of 1/2 of d phi squared d mu phi squared plus m squared over 2 phi squared. Okay, but remember, here for simplicity, I had considered Euclidean spacetime with periodic boundary condition. You can work with other boundary conditions, but periodic boundary condition means that you can integrate by part, and since there are no boundaries, you can rewrite this as an integral over my, why did I put d minus 1? This is time, dimensional spacetime of x, of 1/2 of phi minus the Laplacian operator in d-dimensional space plus m squared phi to phi. So delta is just sum over mu over dx mu squared. This is the Laplace Beltrami operator. Well, for physicists, it's a Laplace operator. It's a Laplacian. For mathematicians, it's a Laplace Beltrami. Beltrami was a okay, operator. So it's a usual just Laplacian. Okay, and the Laplace operator is a negative defined operator, so minus delta is positive. So you apply minus delta plus m squared times the identity operator on the operator phi, and then you take its scalar products with that. So S of phi is a quadratic form for phi. See, consider phi as an infinite dimensional vector given by the value of phi at each point in space-time. This is a scalar product of phi of a ket with a bra, and this is a matrix. This is an operator acting on phi. This is an operator. And in fact, in the if you look at books in mathematical physics, in the theory of functional analysis, this is an operator acting on a space of function, which is well defined, which is a space of squared summable functions. This is a rule theory. See a book on spectral analysis and operator theory. Okay. Yes?
So working in Euclidean space.
I'm in Euclidean space, but if you are not in Euclidean space, you just have to have an add an. Then you have to consider the not the Laplace operator, but the Klein-Gordon operator. Just there is a sign change for the time derivative. So in Euclidean space-time, this is, and in Minkowski, this is nothing but the Klein-Gordon operator. Okay. Sometimes called the D'Alembertian. Okay. But if you remember this trick of weak rotation, you just have to change the space coordinate in Euclidean space-time by it, so we get a minus time. Okay, and therefore, now I can compute z of g, because z of g is just an integral of a phi of exponential, I'm in Minkowski space for simplicity, minus 1 over h bar times s of phi, and s of phi, I can rewrite this as 1/2 a vector which is phi times this operator minus delta phi. And then, of course, I have to add to this minus g times phi. So for the free theory, this is just a Gaussian integral. I integrate over an infinite dimensional vector, but it's a Gaussian integral. Nothing but we know how to perform Gaussian integral. Simply, the extremum of this Gaussian factor is not at phi equals 0, but is shifted by j. But you transform this into a square times g, and what you get by just the rules of Gaussian integral is that there is a normalization factor which is z of 0, g equals 0, times exponential, and if I'm mistaken, this is minus minus, there is a g, so there is a h bar, g times the inverse of this operator, minus delta plus m squared times g. And z of 0 is the value of this integral when you set g equals 0. With z of 0 equal, well, the Gaussian integral of the exponential of a quadratic form is just the determinant of this quadratic form, the determinant of this matrix to the power minus 1/2. So this is just the determinant of minus delta plus m squared, considered as an operator, an infinite dimensional matrix, and normalized by h bar times 2 pi, if you are picky, to the power minus 1/2. So we get a functional it is the determinant which is taken to this power 1/2. So I have a functional determinant. The determinant of an operator acting on functions here times the exponential of a quadratic form, and of course, I'm sorry, very important point, factor minus 1, because here I have a quadratic form. If I want to transform this into a perfect square, I have to add to this minus j, the inverse of the operator j, and minus plus. So there is a plus sign. So these are the results. Okay. So by functional integral, we are computed this g of g just by using the rules of Gaussian integration. And we know the rule dependence in j of this generating function for the correlation function of the free field. Okay, so now these are the main results. And of course, this translates into for W of J as W of J for the free field. Remember, so it's first there is an h bar here. Remember, it's h bar times log of this. So I get the log of this is just this quadratic form. So first I get the log of z0, the log of the determinant, and the log of a determinant is a trace of a log. So this is w of 0. But there is a factor h bar, so there is which is proportional to h bar, times plus the log of this which is, if I am not mistaken, there is an h bar squared. J minus delta plus m squared times J. Okay, so this is the second result. Okay. Now, what is this object? Maybe I'll use the definition. What is this?
Professor, should there be an inverse there on the Laplace operator?
I have inverted the, oh, I'm sorry. This is a crucial point, and of course, this is the inverse. Okay. It's time for me to stop.
Invert an operator.
Why?
How do you invert an operator?
It's a.
How do you do the inversion?
I'll show you. So now I have to compute what do I mean by G times the inverse of this differential operator times G. Okay, this is of course integral over d dx d dy. Now this is an operator which is not a differential operator, so it's not local. So it's g of x, g of y times the kernel of this operator, which is a function of g of x and y. Where this another g. Anyway, this is a kernel of the operator inverse of minus delta plus m squared. So it's a function of the two points, which is the kernel of the inverse of this operator. It's just the definition of a kernel of an operator. Now, this is the inverse of this operator. So this is minus delta plus m squared times minus delta plus m squared minus 1 equals the identity operator. That's the definition of the inverse of an operator. So now, inverted in terms of the kernel representation of an operator, this is, I take the kernel of this operator, g of x and y. So y refers to this j, and x refers to this j. So I apply this operator to the variable x. So I have minus delta plus m squared with respect to the variable x of g of xy is equal to the kernel of the identity operator. And the kernel of the identity operator is just a diagonal matrix. So in terms of for function, it's just the delta function, Dirac's delta function, which is a distribution of x minus y. Okay, so the kernel of this operator inverse of minus delta plus m squared, minus the Laplace, which I have written as this function, g of x and y, satisfies this differential equation. And sure, you have seen this differential equation. This is the equation where you apply minus delta plus m squared to a function and you get a source. So, better use two remarks. First, this is invariant by translation. X belongs to, so remember, X and Y belongs to RD, since I am in a Euclidean setting. Therefore, this is translation invariant. So G of X can be replaced . It's also rotational invariance, but we check that. So g of x and y is in fact a function of g of x minus y. Now take the Fourier transform. Of this. So instead of g of x, you get g hat of k, where k is a four-dimensional covector. Okay, but what is the Fourier transform of this operator? This is precisely k squared plus m squared, where k is a d-dimensional covector. It's a momentum operator times g hat of k equal, and what is the Fourier transform of the Dirac delta function is the identity. Okay? So g hat of k is just 1 over k squared plus m squared. This is a Lorentzian function in RD. Okay. And therefore, go back to g of x minus y. G of x of y is the inverse Fourier transform of this. So this is the integral over the momenta. Well, there is a 2 pi to the power d normalization factor. The exponential I k times x, remember, those are vectors divided by k squared for n squared. Okay. So this is what is called the Euclidean propagator. Okay, so we know what is this object. So W of J can be replaced by G of X times the Euclidean propagator of X. So W of J is W of 0 plus, so there was an h bar squared, times integral dx dy in d dimension of g of x, g of xy, given by this formula, times g of y. Or we can write this equivalently in Fourier transform, have integral over dk, g hat, well, g of minus k, g of k, 1 over k squared plus m squared. This is just the Fourier transform of this. This is g hat, the Fourier transform of j, the source term. So this is very simple. Okay. So now, we go back to correlation functions. And then I can, it's okay. I think I can just go back to correlation function. The expectation value in the free field theory of phi to the point v1 sub phi to the point zn, okay, remember, it's the derivative with respect to j. It's 1 over h bar to the power of a. Well, let me keep. It's delta over delta g of z1, delta over delta g of zn. I set h bar to 1 for simplicity, of the exponential of this function. So it's exponential. Oh, and there is a factor 1/2. I'm sorry. I forgot the important 1/2 factor here. That's rather stupid. There is, of course, a 1/2 factor here because there was a 1/2 factor here. Yes?
In the blue box on W of j, it would be W of 0, not W of 5.
Z of 0 is the exponential of W of 0. I'm sorry. Why did I wrote W of phi? Oh, I'm sorry. Which one is it? I'm sorry. This is just a typo, but a disastrous typo. Of course, there is no phi anymore. We have integrated over phi. So W of 0 is the log of the determinant of this object, which doesn't depend on phi. OK. So it's a derivative of those objects, but we can, W doesn't depend on 0, so it's the exponential of 1/2 g minus delta plus n squared minus 1 times g at g equals 0. So the n-point correlation function in the free theory, so this is in the free theory, so I put a 0 to denote the fact that there are no coupling constants, is just the functional derivative of the exponential of a quadratic form, setting g equals 0. But now, you take the first derivative, you get 1 minus delta plus n squared 1/2, j gets out of the exponential, gets down from the exponential. You can take the second derivative. Either it acts on the g that has been, that went down, or it acts on another g. You see? So at the end, you set g equals 0. So you recover simply by taking derivative of the exponential of a quadratic form, you get that this is the sum over pairings between z1, zn, and you have, if n equal 2m, you have m pairings of minus delta plus n squared minus 1, the matrix element of these at point at the pairing. So you have pairings i1, i2, i3, i4, etc. of at point z i1, z i2. And you have the products. So you get Wick's theorem. This is Wick's theorem. From Gaussian integrals. Instead of from using commutation relation between creation and annihilation of operator of the free field, we get the same kind of results, but just by Gaussian integration. So, of course, what you get is that. And there is a h-bar for each which cancels the h-bar. So phi of z1, phi of z2, for instance, for the two-point function, this is just z of z1 minus z2. The Fourier transform of the propagator in Euclidean space, the Lorentzian function. Now, four-point function, phi of z1, phi of z2, phi of z3, phi of this O, and you find that this is G of Z1 minus Z2 times G of Z2 3 minus Z4 plus G of Z1 minus Z3 times G of Z2 minus Z4 minus G of Z1 minus Z4 G of Z2 minus Z3. This one is obtained if you first take a derivative with respect to Z of G1. Second, you take a derivative with respect to G of Z3. And then you take a derivative with respect to G of Z2 of this, of the term which went down, etc. So you get that. So this is, you can represent this as a propagator between point 1 and point 2. This is, of course, propagator 1 and 2. And 3 and 4. This is 1, 3, 2, 4. And this is 1. Sorry. This is 1, 3, 2, 4. And this is 1, 4. 2, 3. Just comes out from derivative of exponentials, etc. So we have weak theorem from Gaussian integrals from A dagger A. Or A Heidegger equals 1. Of course, we get the same result from completely different perspective. Instead of dealing with operator, we deal with integral. But we get, of course, the Weak theorem. Okay, so I was hoping to show you now how you can derive for the interacting theory Feynman diagrammatics. Because this is just the first step of Feynman diagrammatics for free field. But I'll stop and I'll explain this briefly next time. Okay? Yes?
Why do we have a minus sign there?
Pardon?
Why do we have a minus sign in the left?
Why is there a minus sign? That's because I am very tired and therefore there is a typo. Thank you for spotting. Well, there probably are more typos. Of course, you get, this is a scalar field, which is a bosonic field, so you get plus signs. But the plus signs come from the stacks, you have exponential of quadratic forms. You have no minus. There would be minus signs with fermions, as you know, but this requires a bit more involved functional integral calculation. Yes?
So somehow the factor of 1/2 in the exponential disappeared because the propagator is symmetric and I can like flip the endpoints?
Yes, in fact the factor 1/2 comes from the fact that the propagator is symmetric. You can invert the two points, you get the same results. But all those factors come from symmetry factors, yes. So that's why we define the action. That's why the action is defined starting point with a 1/2 for this. D mu phi squared is a 1/2 of phi squared. That's because if you exchange the two phi, it's symmetric. And that's why for the interacting theory that I erase for phi to the 4, it's convenient to associate a 1 over factorial 4 for the phi 4 term, because you can make a permutation of all the 4 phi is the same term. Yeah. So these are, in some sense, combinatoric factors. The combinatoric factor associated to the simplest Feynman diagrams, which is just the propagator. Yeah. Another question? Okay, thank you.